Hey there, my name is Christian Kniep. I'm a developer advocate for HPC at AWS. A while back I gave a talk about containers at FOSDEM 2016. Today, I would like to baseline everyone on HPC runtimes and engines, so that we are all on the same page and have a common understanding about how to dissect the container ecosystem. This talk will firstly recap why containers are a good thing in general, while explaining why the standard tech was not flying in HPC. Second, I will discuss why that is in particular. With that, we are going to dissect the container ecosystem into palatable slices. Fourth, from change root all the way to modern HPC runtimes. In conclusion, I'll recap and touch on what is the next layer to be built on top of runtimes. When Docker was announced and released in 2013, it started the widespread adoption of containerization on developer laptops. Open research sites like NERSC or CSCS started to getting requests to run containers on their HPC systems soon after. But with the Docker architecture and stack at the time, it was impossible to be applied to the shared environment HPC sites are running in. In the early days, running containers was used to run a service in isolation. Let us have a look at the monolithic stack from back then. We had a client running in the user context, communicating with the same binary running as a service in root context. The process running within the container is a child of the actual Docker daemon. Even worse, you were able to trick the kernel's POSIX access barrier. The container API allows to define the user within the container and bind mount directories. Without SE Linux or AppMR watching over file system access, it was a scary thing, and it seems like Pandora's box for system admins. More so, for traditionalists whose stance was, why do we need this in the first place? We are fine with what we have. But let's be clear, this is the intended use of the API, until today. In non-HPC land, that is fine, and by keeping the container independent of the host and data access managed in a more cloudy fashion, not relying on the POSIX barrier, rather whether a volume is available in the first place, that's also fine. All of that did not hold back students and researchers knocking on doors to ask how to run containers in open research facilities. Thus, folks at NERSC, Barclay, and LANL started experimenting. Hey, Charlie Cloud, Shifter, and Singularity. Before we dive deeper into the runtimes, let us first discuss the challenges we face in HPC, or rather in shared systems, through the lens of iterations of machine learning, as they were the first to pick up container tech. Okay, first we start with the simplest version. We use TensorFlow on a node in total isolation. The data is located in a volume only accessible by the container, maybe downloaded within the container from S3 even. We only access CPU, memory, and network through the container. That is how containers were designed to work. Please keep this in mind. Total portability, as we do not make assumptions about the underlying host. Build, ship, and run everywhere is the slogan, and the abstraction of the underlying host made sure it worked. But containers were just too attractive to not bundle up all the weird stacks used in more progressive and hard-to-control stacks like AIML. Thus, they were quickly adopted to access GPUs. Access to the driver and some devices, and off you went. NVIDIA was quick to jump all in and help by forking Docker as NVIDIA Docker, which was hacky at first, but over the years became a good citizen, utilizing standards. Data was still isolated, though. As we saw in my scary example earlier, the screaming began when you needed access to a shared POSIX file system without control over the UID of the process. By then, you also encountered the first cracks in your understanding of the clear cut between userland kernel space drivers. But you blew the lid off completely when you were dealing with distributed apps using kernel bypassing NICs, MPI, and traditional HPC schedulers. MPI run needed to reach out to remote hosts, typically using SSH, and we don't want SSH to run in all containers, right? PMI relaxes this a tad, but you still need to initialize the MPI domain across all instances. To wire up all the processes, MPI communication does not like knotted networks typically used in container land and needs to communicate with other processes. All of that with the added complexity of MPI with its different variants, ABI compatibility, and PMI. Today, we as a community are pretty much able to address all those challenges. But back then, skeptics wanted all or nothing. I'd say the scariest one was the POSIX issue because it was the easiest to understand. The rest was WD-40 and duct tape. It was easy to find edge cases to poke holes and break the current setup. Some just threw in a security expert that stalled the process for sure. With the challenges in mind, let us dissect the ecosystem from the bottom up. The lowest layer is the runtime. Its sole purpose is to create an actual interactive process with some isolation, at least an isolated file system view for the process. The easiest and earliest example of a runtime might be change root. What is needed? A root file system we can change into, and I will fetch an Alpine tarball here. To change root, we need to have privileges, which makes sense if you think about what you can do. You can create your own etc passvd, change the sudoers file. Change root is pretty much the keys to the kingdom. But still, it created a process within a new root file system. Fast forward to today. We can use the same root file system to spawn a container using runc. We already got the root file system from the change root example. Only thing missing is the runtime spec. We'll create one using runc spec, and we are even creating a rootless container. No privileges needed anymore. When running the container, we have a similar look and feel as with change root, but the configuration created applies some sensible defaults. The user within the container is mapped to an unprivileged user outside of the container. Access to devices is filtered, syscalls are limited, and so forth. Runc is the first implementation of an OCI-compliant runtime, back when monolithic Docker stack was broken up into models for reuse. But runc for sure is the plumbing. The user needs to come up with the configuration file. It won't deal with fetching images and extracting root file system for later use. That is why a layer above is needed. After exploring the runtime, let us look at the engine. It's taking care of all the setup, assembling the config and dealing with downloading an image optimized for distribution. After the image is downloaded, it will extract the rootfs, what is called a snapshot, which the runtime will use. In the runc example, we used wget and tar to download the image and extract the snapshot and runc spec to generate a configuration file. We could also use Docker to download an image, extract the snapshot, and copy the snapshot over to a local directory. Within the traditional Docker stack, Containerd is used as an engine. And don't worry, we will have a look at other engines like Seros and Podman as well. Now, let us have a look how this engine and runtime plays out in the Docker stack first. This architecture is pretty busy with all the interaction options and plugins. Let me reduce the noise so that we can focus on the important parts. We are using the Docker CLI to interact with Dockerd. And I'm a bit oversimplifying here. I'm ignoring the difference between content and image, ignoring the namespace service and the task service. But for this talk, we'll go with only three pieces: images, snapshots, and run. Okay, in Dockerland, we use Docker pull to pull an OCI image from a registry. Docker pull will reach out to the registry for the latest image available and check the local store if it is already present. If not, we download the image and keep it locally. Docker create does what we saw me doing in the